Before I get into my text this morning, I would like to say a few words. This morning will mark the third time I have stood in the pulpit to bring a sermon on the Sunday after a preacher I have worked with closely has departed. Each time this happened, I honestly thought I would not be in the same position again, for each circumstance was unique and different in itself. Even though this is my third time, I can tell you that the task really does not get easier through repetition. We are a community here, a church family, if you will. And we are in prayer and in fellowship and sharing and in help. And so as a community, we care about the various members. We're part of their lives. So in many ways, losing a pastor, it can be like losing a family member. And even though you may well know it's coming, when it comes, you find you're not ready. But partings happen. It's a fact of life that wherever you are and whatever you're doing today, eventually there will come a time to move on. We leave jobs. We leave relationships. We leave homes. So whether you talk geography or people or occupation, or sometimes even emotion, we move on. When moving on, and we all do, it's appropriate to look back and see what you left. Where are you going? What have you gained? What have you lost? What have you learned during that process? Now that Pastor Colby has moved on, we can look back and ask, what did we learn? When we called a young pastor, there was an assumption, an unspoken assumption, but an assumption nonetheless, that a young man will be strong and vigorous, ready to work hard. We thought he could give many years to the ministry here at Allegheny Baptist. Now, our pastor ended up to have some health problems that were far more serious than we or he ever anticipated. This was an issue that had to be dealt with. As a congregation, we stepped up to deal with it. In the private sector, where I came from, such a problem would bring to mind letting the person go. Can't do the job, let him go. Or giving an unpaid leave of absence under the Family Medical Leave Act. The Church of Jesus Christ is to be different than the world at large. It runs on grace, runs on love. So as a church worked through this issue, we learned some things. We learned patience. We learned endurance. The problem was not resolved in a week or a month. In fact, the problem is not resolved even now. It's more somewhat under control. While learning patience, we learned compassion, for we gave the pastor health-related leave to recover, and we made a paid leave, not to burden him and his young family. And so while practicing compassion, we also learned generosity. God loves a cheerful giver. So not only did we give paid leave, but we gave more, and we gave generously to help with the medical bills. Now, the pastor at the time when he was having health problems had a vision for midweek service and for Sunday school, but he lacked the energy to carry out his vision. Different men from the church stepped up and they worked to bring the vision to fruition. May not have been done just exactly as the pastor would have done it himself, but still the work was done. And so we learned to strive to advance a ministry which was a vision not of our conception, but of his. We learned to step out of our comfort zone and do some things perhaps we had not done before. And so as we get ready to keep the church going and seek another pastor, we should all remember that learning patience, endurance, compassion, generosity, and working to bring a vision to fruition are all to the credit of the church. They're not learned in vain. And I have to tell you, I'm very proud of the way the church stepped up and the things they did. It's a testimony that this is the Church of Christ, not necessarily the Church of Allegheny Baptist, because the name matters very little if you follow Christ, and it matters even less if you don't. So, anyway, that's my story. We're going to go to Genesis and then a couple other scriptures, and we're going to speak about partings. Genesis 12 contains the directions to Abraham. I'm going to read verses 1 through 5 to start. Now the Lord had said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you. Make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram departed, as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. And so they came to the land of Canaan. Here we see the father of our faith leaving, and partings are hard. It's part of the human condition. We cling to familiar things, whether they are places or occupation, people, even things. These familiar things are known to us and safe. And to leave them is to venture out into the unknown. We don't like that. Now, my grandfather told me if the barn catches on fire and it's crazy and smoke and flames and heat, the horse will try to run back inside the barn. He knows the barn. He's always been safe there. He has his own stall, which he knows. And in the stress and fear, he tends to run back where he's been safe in the past. So our text speaks to a parting, and this parting is part of our Christian heritage. The courage and the faith of one man, we are blessed even today. So Abram went out in obedience, not knowing where he was going. But he did not go out in complete obedience. He was told to go forth from his relatives, but he took his nephew Lot along. Notice that in 12:7, Abram was promised that to his descendants the land would be given. Later, Abram separated from Lot, and after that, we see in 13, and I'm going to read that portion, verses 14 and 15, and the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which you see I give to you and your descendants forever. Now, this was a parting that came from God. He commanded Abram to go. And we do see that Lot was not the man that Abram was. And further, from Lot came the people of Moab and Ammon. Clearly, the descendants of Abraham would have been much better off if Lot had been left behind in Haran. We can also see that God is not limited in working in us or working through us. Partial obedience can be worked with. His purpose will not be thwarted. Abram became Abraham, and he received far more in the promised land than he ever left behind. Now, with Isaac and Jacob, we see a different kind of parting. Although it was told to Rebekah that the elder would serve the younger with Jacob and Esau, Jacob didn't wait for the Lord to bring it about. When we anticipate the Lord's blessing, sometimes we feel like we got to help him along a little bit. You know, maybe we need to put our thumb on the scale a little bit. He bought the birthright for a meal, lentil stew, when his brother was hungry, and later he took the blessing through outright treachery. His brother was angry, but he comforted himself with the thought that when Isaac died, he would then kill Jacob. So Rebekah heard of it, and she decided to send Jacob away for his own safety. This was a different kind of parting. Jacob went away as a result of pure deceit practiced by himself and his mother. Jacob went to live with Laban, and after he wore out his welcome at that place, there was yet another parting when he took his wives, children, and livestock to return home. And Jacob was carrying a heavy burden on his way home. It wasn't his wives, and it wasn't his children. It wasn't his livestock or household goods. It was a guilty conscience, a burden that's very difficult to get away from, and the fear that his brother still held a grudge against him. Sometimes the guilty conscience is the heaviest load of all. Jacob did reconcile with his brother, and his father was still alive. He did get to see his father again, and with his brother Esau, he buried his father. There's no record that he ever saw his mother again after leaving. Although deceit and dishonest gain were the things that caused the parting, it seemed that the wives provided to Jacob bore the sons that would be the 12 tribes of Israel. It becomes clear that even a parting of this sort can be used in a mighty way by God to further his purposes. We may part with friends or family, homes, geographic areas. We don't part from God. He can use us in one area or in a different area. And this can clearly be seen as we look back over our lives. As we look at another parting, we look at the parting of Jesus from his disciples. They were not understanding what he was doing. And if we look at the culture of the Middle East, the men were expecting him to be a king, and they were expecting to be princes. High officials of the court, men that people would genuflect to, men that people would bring gifts to, men that people would court in order to have access to the king, because that's the way it works over there. And when he said to them, "I'm leaving, and you know the way," Thomas says, "We don't know where you're going, and how can we know the way?" They didn't get it. And we can scarcely blame them, because we've read the ending. And so he appeared to the disciples a number of times. And in John 21, we find one of these appearances. Peter says, "I go a-fishing." And the other disciples say, "We go with you." Now the parting, when Jesus went to the cross, was traumatic for them. And the resurrection was something they struggled to understand. This was not a kingdom. This was not being a prince. This was not having people come and giving you gifts just for the privilege of seeing you. Nothing is working out as expected. And so they really didn't know what they were going to do. Jesus was not with them every day. He had led them for 3 years. And so the question looms very large. What now? Jesus had accomplished the work that the Father had given him to do. But the difficulty at that point was for the disciples to understand what that was and what their part was. Now, we're not told clearly in the text that Peter had decided to go back to fishing on a permanent basis. Doesn't say that. Or whether he just intended to go fishing that day. But it's clear that Peter and the disciples are struggling. The Messiah had not restored the kingdom to Israel. The disciples did not get important jobs. The Romans were still in charge of Israel. The scribes and Pharisees were still in charge of religious thought and practice in Israel. And so many of the expectations of the disciples had not been met. Jesus appeared on the shore with a fire and some bread and fish, and there's a church built on the traditional spot where this happened. It's an ancient stone church. And as my wife and I stood there when we went to Israel, I could imagine Peter and the disciples fishing out in the Sea of Galilee, because they usually fished relatively close to shore there, and they had small boats. As a matter of fact, when they were doing some work on the Sea of Galilee, they found one from that era buried in the mud. And they managed to dig it out. And it was so fragile, they didn't know what to do. They dug a canal out to the Sea of Galilee and floated it over to where they were going to display it. They didn't want to take it on the road. And so, there he is on the shore. And he tells them, cast their nets on the other side, and they will find a catch. And they fill their nets full of fish. But on the shore, there's a question. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? The other disciples were there. The boat and net full of fish was drawn up on the shore. Here's your friends. Here's the boat. Here's the fish. Here's your associations and your occupation. But all is encapsulated up on the shore there. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? It was a stark contrast. And the answer is yes. Yes. Same question could be asked of any of us today. Could be a job. Could be a house. Could indeed be a boat. And the question then is, do you love me more than these? The answer and the instruction is, shepherd my sheep. God always knows where we were. All of us have a past. All of us have lived life, some of us longer than others. Jesus knew Peter's past as a fisherman. With the imminent departure of Jesus to heaven, will the old occupation of fishing pull Peter back to that way of life? Now, fishing is certainly not a sinful occupation. It's honest work, hard work. But the question doesn't speak to the past. It speaks to the present. Where is your heart right now? Where is your heart today? Do you love me more than these? The question is for today. The instruction is for the future. Does it matter that Peter was a fisherman? Does it matter that he's not a highly educated man? You might say today, does it matter if somebody has this degree or that degree, or what they have accomplished in their life up to this point? The instruction is for the future. If you love me more than these, shepherd my sheep. You're not going back to fishing. What you've learned is far more valuable. There are many out in the world, like sheep without a shepherd, and you're going to lead them in the way they should go. It was true then. It remains true to this day. There are many like sheep without a shepherd in our world. Or when he said he was a door to the sheep, he said, all that came before me are thieves and robbers. And there's many leading people who lead them astray. Or think that godliness is a means to gain. No, it's a means to great gain with contentment. But the sheep are to be led by the good shepherd, not necessarily fleeced. And so, Peter did get an important job in a kingdom not built with hands. And so, starting with Pentecost, he preached and he taught and he became the shepherd of the church. So when faced with a parting, what have we learned? I see some of our young people are back today, but it wouldn't surprise me if there was another parting at some point in the future, although it be with regret on our part. But if you're faced with a parting, what have we learned? First, go with God. For you cannot go without God, and it's foolishness to try. He will work his purposes, whether you obey completely, whether you obey partially, or whether you don't obey at all. You will find, in the long run, it's easier to obey. So, you're going to go where you need to go. You're going to go where God is going to take you. And you can go gladly and willingly, or you can go grudgingly, but you will go. God knows where have you been. He knows fully what you're capable of doing. Abraham partially obeyed. He wasn't given land until he separated from Lot. Jacob tried to be slick, get what he could in that way. But he was sent to an uncle who was even more slippery to see that the blessing of God cannot be thwarted by human guile. For if it could have been, then Laban would have done so. And even when Jacob left, and Laban pursued him hotly, we see that God appears to Laban in a dream and says to him, be very careful what you say to Jacob. It was a stern warning and one that he obeyed. Peter found himself in a confusing time and thought to go fishing. It was something he knew and something he understood. I don't know what this is all about. I didn't get what I expected, but I know how to fish. I go fishing. But he caught no fish at all until he cast his net at the direction of Jesus. He made a miraculous catch, but the joy of this catch was overshadowed by a question. Do you love me more than these? That question comes down through the years. Do you love me more than these? For if you do, parting will be easier. No matter what the parting might be, there is no parting from Christ. And so you might ask, love Christ more than what? More than people? More than places? More than things? More than maybe a job? More than maybe the American god of money? I knew a man that used to call that the green Jesus. How about the things of the past which are left behind at party? We should not be bitter or angry at a parting. It accomplishes nothing. Or the present can be confusing and uncertain, but the confusion of the present will eventually be resolved. For you see, the present will become the past. And things will become clear to us. And we'll understand where we are and what we're doing far more than the future, because we don't know what the future contains. So you might ask me, can you see God's leading in your life? And the answer, like so many answers, is yes and no. Can I see it looking forward? Not so much. Can I see it looking back? Oh, yeah. And basically, what I see is two things: patience and foolishness. Now, the patience is from God, as He has worked in my life in various ways. That leaves the foolishness for me, because there was times, more than once, where there was a certain way I should go, which I resisted strongly. When I was eventually going to get the training and the benefit of the occupation of human resource director, I got that training through volunteer work with the union. And they came and they asked me to take the job. I told them, no, I don't want it. And they came back a second time and they asked me to take the job. I said, get somebody else. I've been at City Hall. I've been all the conflict I ever want to see for the rest of my life. And they came back the third time. And they said, there is nobody else. We don't have anyone else that can do this. Please, 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 you just got to do it. And when the time came for an application to get kicked upstairs, through that volunteer work, I had met all the criteria that I had never seen before for the job that I had never thought about getting. So, how did I blunder into it? Patience and foolishness. So yes, I can see leading if I look back and I could see patience. But if you ask me, where am I going? I don't know. And so, we can't know. Neither you nor I can know what the future is going to contain. We have this coronavirus that's coming over from China. I don't think that anybody anticipated that some kind of an illness would bring down the Dow Jones, would chill economic activity, would lock down cities in China, would become a big issue in Italy and Iran, and come over to the United States. We didn't know that. And we don't know what the toll will be. But we do know that our Lord is God of the past, present, and future. He's not constrained by time. For the psalmist tells us, 1,000 years in thy sight are like yesterday, when it passes by, or as a watch in the night. So when we face the question, as Peter did, Simon, do you love me more than these? He then got something to do. That's not unique to Peter. With the love of God will also come something to do. Now, I can't tell you exactly what you're going to be asked to do. But I can tell you that there will be something. And I think I'll end with that, and we'll have our closing hymn.